You are listening to the Tricorder Transmissions Special. Episode 14. And
now,
here are
Craig
and
Jeff.
Welcome to our 14th supplemental log episode of the Tricorder Transmissions. As always, we are your hosts, Jeff Hewlett.
And Craig Cohen.
So, Craig, this is pretty cool. So, remember back on episode 54, Bread and Circuses, we talked about a new web series called The Red Shirt Diaries?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the story of Ensign Williams, who's a Starfleet recruit aboard the Enterprise, who's recording a diary of her experiences. And fortunately, we've been able to get in touch with the folks behind the show, and they have enthusiastically agreed to come on the show and talk to us. So let's introduce writer-producer Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing wonderful. And we have director-editor Jason Inman.
Hello.
Hello. So good to have you both with us. Ashley, you want to talk a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. I'll just keep going until you tell me to stop.
Great.
So I'm Canadian, which everyone thinks is really, really cool and is a very important detail. And I've been a Star Trek fan since I was 12 years old, but I never had the wherewithal to bring this idea to life. So then when I made the grown-up decision to move out to L.A. and become a big movie star, because it's just that easy, and I met Jason, he was the one who was like, we could really do this. It would be really, really simple. And it turned out to be some of the most work I've ever had to do anything in my entire life, but amazingly rewarding. And if you're into personal trivia, my favorite Star Trek character is Spock.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I really dig the Vulcans.
All right. So, Jason, a little bit about you.
Well, I like long walks on the beach.
Nice. Pina coladas, getting caught in the rain.
Actually, Romulan ale. And I came from Kansas, and I moved out here about 4.5 years ago, and I have just been working in the YouTube area, doing like special DVD features and stuff like that, and doing a lot of YouTube videos. I worked for like Rhett and Link, they're a comedy musical duo, and now I'm branching out on my own, and that's when Ashley brought me this idea and decided to do it. And I've been a big Star Trek fan since the premiere of TNG, which I watched live, and I have watched every Star Trek episode since then live.
Oh, wow. Nice accomplishment.
Yeah.
Nice accomplishment.
Yeah, I see. It's on my resume.
So I see that you wrote an article on a site called Major Spoilers a few days ago.
Yes, actually, Ashley and I both write for that site.
Oh, very cool. I did not know that. So this was the five best Star Trek episodes for non-Trek fans to watch. What was the idea? What gave you the idea to start that one up?
Well, actually, it was that was the day after the anniversary of the Mantrap.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man, I love Star Trek. How can I, you know, write something for Star Trek and get paid to do it? Did you read the list? What do you think?
Yes, I did.
What are your opinions? A lot of people have been giving me guff about it.
No, I thought it was a pretty solid list. Of course, you know, we're an original series focused show, so I was glad to see at least one episode from the original series made the list. Of course, it's the boilerplate City on the Edge of Forever, which is the one that I think Craig and I both use to introduce people to Star Trek. It's a great jumping off point. I am not as familiar with DS9. So
you're wrong.
Whoa.
It's the best.
I know everybody says that. I've been trying to watch it, but I'll catch up eventually. So it seems like a pretty solid list to me. I would probably consult with my buddy Chris, who's our resident DS9 expert, to see if he concurs with that. He's actually watched every episode of every series multiple times, and he's on our show quite a bit as one of our go-to experts on series that we're not as familiar with.
Well, I picked that list, and the episodes I picked was because, you know, if you're a non-Star Trek fan, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to connect with, you know, the techno babble, and you're not going to connect with any of the spacey stuff. What you're going to connect with is if that episode like gives you an emotional experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked those episodes because I felt like all of those episodes have like very strong emotional arcs for the characters that I think anybody, you know, if you don't understand the technology and you don't understand that Spock's a Vulcan, you could still get it. Like, what happens at City on the Edge of Forever? Like, that's, you know, there's some arguments that Edith Keeler could be Kirk's greatest love of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's pretty powerful. And then The Visitor, that Deep Space Nine episode, the whole episode is about Jake Sisko and his dad. And it's about Jake Sisko can't let his dad go. He literally cannot live without his dad. And that series, that episode, I've made this argument before, like, and this is my argument for you to watch Deep Space Nine. That episode of The Visitor might be, in my opinion, the best episode of Star Trek they've ever made.
Wow. Mm. That's saying a lot.
It is. It is. And I know you guys are TOS fans, so like, guys, so like, you might be more biased, but like, no other episode of Star Trek has made me cry besides that episode.
Wow.
I contrastly have cried at about 9, so.
So Ashley, you just mentioned that you are a big DS9 fan.
I am.
So why with the Red Shirt Diaries did you decide to sort of go into the original series?
Because even though Deep Space Nine is and will forever be my favorite series of Star Trek ever, I think that the original series has the strongest characters. And I think that they have the most impactful in popular culture. So, of course, if you're looking at, you know, range and playability, that's always great. Yeah. But Captain Kirk and Spock and McCoy as a triumvirate are very, very strong together. And I think because the themes throughout TOS, because obviously it is the original series, are the most obvious. And I think they're played the strongest at face value, for lack of a better phrase. That lends itself to the ability to create something out of that, like a fan production. And even when you go into parody, because the themes are so strong, because it's visually so striking, because each of the characters is so distinct, it gave me what I thought would be, and turned out to be true, a lot of, I guess, fodder for creative outlet. That sense didn't make any sense.
No, it made perfect sense.
Techno babble.
Yeah.
So there was a sentence that I saw as I was watching your first episode, The Man Trap. There was a sentence I saw in the show notes that I wanted to read out here and get your reaction to.
Oh, Lord. What did I mistype?
No, nothing you mistyped. It stood out to me, and I wanted to read it out. This series was created to show our love of Star Trek and how much the show has shaped our lives for years. I was wondering, jump into that a little bit, and how did it shape both of your lives?
Star Trek has actually probably had more impact on my life. I don't want to misspeak for you.
Hey,
but
you open this up. Go ahead.
All right, sorry. I was set on the goal of becoming an astronaut until I was like 12. And it was all I talked about and is all I wanted to do. And it was because of Star Trek The Next Generation. Like, I got into that show and I was there. And then it was through that show, you know, this is pre-internet days. Like, luckily, the local library had, like, VHS tapes, and that's how I saw Charlie X for the first time, and the Corbomite Maneuver, which is actually my favorite TOS episode of all time.
Wow.
And it really, like, really shaped, like, my life, because, like, I was so into that and so going to be an astronaut, and then, like, I was horrible at math, and my teacher once told me, he's like, you know, you have to learn a lot of math to do that, right? And I was like, oh, crap. And my dreams just came tumbling down. And then I spent my junior high and high school career trying to figure out how I could go to Star Trek without being an astronaut, or how I could get closest to that. And it wasn't until high school that I was like, wait a minute. There's people that make these things. That's how I can do it.
Nice. So, Ashley, did it shape your life at all?
Well, about the time I started watching Star Trek was when I decided that I wanted to be an actor person. So in a much more selfish and a much less magical way, it's been my goal for over 10 years now to be involved in an official production of Star Trek in some meaningful way to me, which would be as long as I could see my face on the camera somewhere. Like, that would be super, super cool. But also, I do a lot of writing outside of Red Shirt Diaries, which Jason actually deserves a huge chunk of the writing credit for as well. And I, again, like I was saying, with the strength of the characters and the theme, like, Star Trek is always something that you can go back to, especially if you're doing a science fiction, because it's so powerful. So even if you're not doing, you know, a direct parody or satire or riff, taking some pastiche on it, it's always a good place, I think, to start from. So I think in a lot less romantic sense, that's how it shaped my life. But now, you know, now I'm in my 20s and I still have 4 different Spock action figures. So there's clearly some psychological impact there.
Which 4 do you have?
I don't know, what's the series called?
The Art Asylum.
The Art Asylum one.
Oh, I have some of those.
I have the pop vinyl Kirk and Spock. I have, I don't know what the name of it is off the top of my head, which I should, but there's a company in LA and they do these, it's a similar idea to pop vinyl, but they're smaller and generally more cuter looking, and they're Spock, Kirk, and Uhura were their beta series. So I have the Spock from that, and then I have a tiny Spock who's Zachary Quinto from Burger King, and he says a couple different phrases.
Oh,
he's like awesome. An inch and a half tall. So I'm pretty accepting of Spock across the franchises.
Do you have any like favorite Spock moments from the original series?
Oh man, that's tough. Oh, bug.
I have one.
Okay, you can go. Let me think.
Can I interrupt on your question?
Yeah.
What is the episode, gentlemen, where Spock goes to the planet and he gets the spores?
Oh, This Side of Paradise?
Yes, there you go. My favorite Spock moment of the whole thing is when he comes back up to the ship and he's in that cargo uniform, and then Kirk spends like 5 minutes egging him on until they have that fist fight.
Yep.
That's my favorite.
which they then redid in the first J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, they got pretty close to it, yeah.
As long as he's raising an eyebrow and looking condescending, I'm pretty much there.
Yeah.
Isn't that the fight scene where Kirk slugs Spock in the face and Spock just kind of turns back with this enraged look on his face, like,
yeah, yeah. You just, it's like, me. It didn't affect him at all.
Yeah, I love that moment. That was a good one. So I guess we've actually used your favorite character was Spock. What about you, Jason?
Oh, man, that's tough.
Original series, of course.
What's it? Original series?
Yes.
See, original series, I have to go with Kirk.
Wow.
Like, I have to go because he's basically a space cowboy, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
He'll generally shoot something first instead of, you know, and then like sleep with the women. Although that's been exaggerated over the years.
Yeah. He's a great leader though.
Kirk's very smart, and Kirk always has a plan. And then when he doesn't have a plan, he has a bluff. And there's something that's been lost, I think, and maybe a little bit even in the J.J. Abrams, that like Kirk is this like strong, he's like this force of will that cannot be stopped. And he will figure a way out, and he will do it. But he's more action-oriented, and Picard's kind of similar, but Picard tends to go more towards negotiation, whereas Kirk tends to more go towards, I'm going to kick him in the face. That's my action.
It's very true.
I don't know. I really like that. And then, of course, like I like the whole thing of, especially when you look at the series, and I don't know whether you gentlemen look at it this way, like where that Spock and McCoy are part of his, you know, the id and the ego.
I love that so much.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're part of him, and they're all three of them make one person.
Yep.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And to sort of expand on you know, your Kirk explanation, one of the things that I love about Kirk, and he's my favorite character, is how he is able to push his crew to, you know, sort of reach their level. You know, their maximum, you know, output, if you will, in terms of really getting results out of people and, you know, sort of pushing them to the edge, which I think is really, really great. And it shows sort of the trust he has in his crew.
And they're so fiercely loyal to him, mm-hmm. because I don't know if any of the other captains, like in Star Trek 3, they all basically accept court-martial to go help him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, and they sort of do this in Insurrection, but it's not as strong. Like, I don't really believe in Insurrection. They kind of just, I think it happens because of the script. But in 3, you're like, they're all throwing their careers away because Kirk's like, let's do this.
Yeah.
So that's funny. You guys are divided on the Kirk and Spock, just like Craig and I are divided on Kirk and Spock. I'm a Spock guy.
Yes.
Myself. So
logic. Don't shoot things first.
Exactly. So Jason's favorite episode is the Corbomite Maneuver. How about you, Ashley? Original series?
Original series. It's probably Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Wow.
Because it's one that I'd never seen before we did the watch through to write these episodes. And I just think Gary Mitchell is like so rad. which probably sounds incredibly shallow, but it's the one story point and storyline that I really want more from. And I like seeing Kirk have to deal with someone who is better than him, like more powerful, more threatening, but someone who he has this devotion and like in a totally heteronormative way.
You once told me too that you really hope that J.J. Abrams like brings Gary Mitchell into the movies.
I do, and Jason actually told me that that's who Benedict Cumberbatch was rumored to play for a long time. Yep. And I'm kind of crushed now that didn't turn out to be a thing.
Yeah, I remember that rumor, and I was so hoping that it wasn't going to be Khan when I went in to see the movie.
Me too.
I resigned myself to that a long time ago.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because they were like, "No, he's not Khan," and I was like, "Okay, so he's Khan." Got it. I didn't believe it for a minute. I was like, "I watched Lost. You're lying."
Oh man, it's funny. I remember saying. I was talking to Craig about this a long time ago when the movie had come out. I remember sitting in the movie theater and thinking to myself, okay, and up until he actually revealed that, I was just making up any excuse in my mind to believe that he wasn't Khan. I'm like, okay, he's one of Khan's people. He's going to try to free Khan. And at the end of the movie, he's going to be successful and free Khan, and then they're going to have another one. So he's going to come back.
That way better.
Yeah, and because it was like, he doesn't look anything like Khan. He doesn't have an accent. I mean, there's something not right here. So when the reveal came, it was kind of, ugh. Actually, one of our other show regulars, Vernon Wilmer, actually threw his hands up and walked out when the Khan was revealed.
When I saw it, it was like 50-50 people being like, and people just being like, no, what?
Yeah, when I saw it, like, they were like, yeah, it was about like a whole bunch of groans. Like, people were like, ugh, really?
Oh, that's great. So let's get into the Red Shirt Diaries a bit. So, why don't we start with the writing process? So actually, what is the writing process like for you? Obviously, you guys research. You have a lot of knowledge of the episodes. What is writing?
I'm really good friends
like?
With Memory Alpha.
Ah, yes, great site. I use it a lot.
I find the writing process really stressful because I kind of do the first draft. Like Jason and I watch the episodes together, and then we talk about, you know, generally how we felt about it, the stuff that stuck out to us. And then we try to find what's the minutia in the episode that we can play off of, because obviously I can't just willy-nilly throw my character into the episode, because a lot of the TOS episodes are Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. And even though it's obviously like a fan production and fan fiction, we didn't feel that it was okay to just be like, okay, so you're with Kirk for all of the Corbomite maneuver. So it's a lot of like picking up on the details and the kind of jokes that we could make that would make sense for my character in her position, in her rank. And then I take a bunch of notes. I go away and write the first draft. I give it to Jason. He tells me how to fix it. I fix it. And then, this is my opinion, it's valid. And then usually we sit down together one more time and we're like, okay, this line, like people don't talk like this, so we're gonna change this line a little bit. Or, oh, like what about this idea that we didn't have a week ago? And then we finalize it, and then when we shoot it, there's a lot of room for improv as well. Like in our last episode that aired, Charlie X, a lot of the exercises were different, a different motion than I originally brought, or we renamed them. And we had a lot of improv moments that made it into the final cut. So it's generally a lot of Jason fixing things is how the writing process goes.
It's really not that one-sided as she's making it. She did a lot. She had a lot of excellent ideas, and there were there were several episodes that were totally all her.
Now, did you guys decide you were going to do the first 10 episodes and sort of write them in sort of one big session before you went into production?
Yeah, we wrote them over the course of a month, a couple of months.
Yeah, it was
I think
a month and a half.
At the same time that we were building our set with our bare hands, pretty close to the same time, and we had all 10 scripts finalized, I think a couple weeks before we started shooting, because that was something that we definitely thought was really important, was that we had a solid idea of how this was going to go, because we do wind up bringing on a lot of other people throughout the series. So we thought that at least if we had the scripts and at least if I had all the lines and we had the basic blocking and stuff, then we could not worry about that and worry about what everybody else was doing.
Excellent.
So tell us a little bit about the set, actually, since you brought it up.
We made it with our bare hands. And it's inspired by Kirk's quarters.
I was going to ask that.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Like, there was a picture of Kirk's quarters that I saw, and it had like these brown little pieces of art. These like really like kind of, I want to say 70s art, even though it was set in the 60s. And then it had this like orange, bright orange light just like bouncing off that wall. And so I was like, all right, so we have to have these brown squares on here somewhere, and we have to have this orange light, because it's like, that's just law. And you know, a lot of the set is hand painted. And
I would say all of it is hand painted.
Well, yeah, all of it's hand painted. There you go. Sorry. But we kind of just spent a day like having her sit in there, and like I kind of put her in there, and we put the camera up there, and we're like, okay, well, let's fill in this spot because otherwise it looks empty. And you know, and we found that cool little Starfleet poster on DeviantArt, so we're like, oh, we'll throw that up there. And then the computer panel in the background is Christmas lights. But here's the thing, like you can see there's one actually lit up illuminated panel on her wall where the lights are actually lit up. And the reason there's only one was because I wasn't sure it was going to work. And I wasn't sure if it was going to just look stupid and you're going to be like, that's Christmas lights, you know, back there. So I only did one because I was like, well, at least if it looks stupid, we only have one. But
it looks really good.
It looks so cool that now I'm like, damn it, we should have just covered the wall with Christmas lights.
That's pretty awesome. Did you have to build any extra apparatus for the puppet in the man trap?
I built that whole puppet. It's Jason's hand, mm-hmm. which a lot of people seem to know intuitively. I don't know if you credited yourself, but everyone's like, oh, Jason was so good as Gertrude. And we're like, yeah. it's a burlap sack sort of in place of a flower pot because he was lying on the floor with his hand in the air, and that seemed a little ridiculous. It's a sleeve of a green shirt. And then we found this pink like washer mitt for dishes or like household chores. And then a bunch of little girls' tutus.
It was a tutu, yeah.
Made out of tulle. Yeah. And so it was a lot of cutting off a strip, rolling it into a little ball, and then gluing it to the hand. And I put the hand of the puppet on for the first time, and it's really stiff. And it's really kind of heavy because there's so much glue on it.
The only thing we did is there was a table beside her, and then we blacked out the bottom of the table so that I could have my arm right there, and you wouldn't see that my arm was there.
Huh. Well, it didn't look very stiff because he did some very wild hand movements there.
Yeah.
And I guess was the sound effects for Gertrude done at the same time, or did you overdub those?
A funny thing, all the sound effects for Gertrude are me from the floor.
They're live.
And I actually had never intended that. Like, I was going to like overdub them, but for some reason they just worked, and I was like, I don't need to change these.
I think because you were really loud and scary. Yeah. You never did the same thing in any of the takes either, which I think adds kind of a fun quality to it.
Well, if you have a space plant, if you have a space plant inches away from you and this thing can bite you, like, it's unpredictable and you need to be afraid of it. And that's why I always, like, there were some takes like Gertrude just bit her, and there were some takes where like Gertrude would just scream for no reason, and then like, so I just, we did that, I don't know, like maybe 8 or 9 times.
That was the first episode we shot, so we spent the most time
yeah,
on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and it was just in editing, like going through it and being like, okay, which Gertrude takes are the funniest?
It really is one of the highlights of that episode for me. I'm a big fan of physical humor, and a lot of the reactions are just, they're really, really funny.
I invite you to wait till episode 4.
Oh, awesome.
Which is almost entirely physical humor.
Oh, great. I can't wait.
It's the naked time, so it kind of has to be, right?
Oh, I can only imagine. It's very cool. So moving into the production side, since we're getting there. So what is the recording and editing process like for you guys?
Well, I'll speak a little bit to recording, but I'm not talented enough to know anything about the editing. So from my side of the camera, what a lot of it was is if it's just me, then I learned all my lines, I think, like a week before we started, just to get that out of the way. It's just running through it. We do a few rehearsals, maybe 3, and the first one is usually pretty bland, and then we fix it. And we add a lot of detail, which is what a director is for. And then we usually shoot it. I want to say we averaged between 3 and 6 takes, kind of depending on what the episode was. And we worked through all of my stuff the night before. So if we had to bring somebody in, we could focus more on them. And that wouldn't get in the way.
And we also shot the whole series in 2 days. We shot all 10 episodes on a Saturday and a Sunday. So we did 5 episodes a day.
And we allotted 2.5 hours to mm-hmm. each episode.
And so we had a very tight schedule. And so it was, well, because like at the time I was working a full-time job, and a weekend was the only amount of time I could give to it. Mm-hmm. So it was like, if we don't get it the Saturday and Sunday, we don't get it. Yeah. And So it was like, that's why we heavily rehearsed, because when we were rolling, I wanted it, like, every take needed to be usable.
Some of them are one takes. Like episode 5 is a one take. So we shot that one really quickly and we're like, cool, it's been 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Let's hang out. And then some of them with some of the guest stars, because we changed a lot of the What Are Little Girls Made Of episode. With our two guest stars, the two Brooke Geeks, who are great. So we changed a lot of it. So that took almost the full 2 hours. And then on Charlie X, I ruined the lighting. And so it took almost the full 2 hours because Jason had to fix the lighting. Ooh. But it was really easy.
One of her exercises, she bumped the triangle light on the background. And it came out looking like a square.
It literally ruined everything.
And so the next hour was set on, how do we get this triangle back?
But we didn't move the camera, you know, it's which is kind of the conceit of doing the log. So we didn't have to do a lot of coverage shots, which I think helped streamline the process. But I don't know what it was like for you being the boss of everything.
It was all right. It was all right, you know. And in terms of editing, the longest part of it was doing the color correction, because there's something about the way they shot television in the 60s that doesn't look like anything that we can do now. And a lot of that's film, and a lot of that's, you know, like they were using 35 millimeter and their lighting. And that's why, like, I tried to match the lighting as close as I could with, you know, with a little exceptions, because I didn't want to make it as dark as they make it. But, like, color correction was about a 2-week process, just because, like, man, and we had several different ways we wanted to go. Like, we did a version where we colored it exactly like they would have colored it back then. And you look at it and you're like, that looks cool, but
it's weird.
But it's weird and I don't want to watch it because it looks old. And then we did a version where we tried a version where we colored it like JJ's movie. Like, we're like, okay, how can we get close to JJ's movie? And so we colored it like that. And we're just like, okay, that doesn't work for this set at all. And so we kind of got to like a weird mixture of coloring it like I would color anything like normally, and then throwing a lot of saturation in there, because that's what they did in the 60s. And then, like, it never looked right until I added film grain on top of it. So there's a little bit of film grain in there, even though we shot it on a DSLR. And then just like that, as soon as that popped in place, it was like, all right, I can believe this is the 1960s original series.
Yeah, especially with that asymmetrical haircut.
So how about the props? I noticed in the Man Trap you had some of that cube food in there. Do you guys make all the props, or?
Yes, or we bought them somewhere. Oh. The funny thing about those cubes is the one that's supposed to be gross, Jason was like, you should get something that you actually don't like the taste of. So I got avocado. And we did several takes, you know, and I spit it on the plate every time. And then I left it in our kitchen, which is also where our craft services was. And several actors spent the rest of the day eating from that plate. Oh. So I was like, cool, I'm glad I'm not ill right now. We had a few of the props, like, between the two of us already. Some of it was, like, we had a tricorder from
the movie,
and we had a friend who had a tricorder from the original series, so that you may or may not get a fun contrast between the two of them.
And also, the other thing about it is, and I've seen a couple comments about this, is that our Captain Kirk wears the movie uniform, and that was because I was Captain Kirk for Halloween last year. Uh-huh. And it didn't make sense to go buy another Captain Kirk. We made the series for less than $500. Nice. And a lot of that was set and, like, you know, just lights
food.
And food. And so it was like, well, we can't really spend a lot of money on costumes. We already have this Captain Kirk shirt. Let's just wear it. And hopefully our story will let us get past the fans.
I think the only uniform that we bought was the red dress, because I only had a blue Spock shirt and that wasn't going to do. But I can't remember all of the props, but I know that we built several of them and we had to go kind of suss out things that we could either use in place of, or like we had to figure out what we're going to use for a ceiling panel. Yeah. So
for a panel to a Jeffrey tube that it's in her quarters. And we had to figure out what was that going to be? And we're like, yeah. And it's so funny because I think we spent some time. We were like, oh, are we going to use a duck grating? Are we going to use this?
Yeah, we'll go buy one. No problem.
You literally only see it on camera for half a second.
Did I just pick up on a spoiler there? Did you just mention that Captain Kirk makes an appearance?
Yes.
Ah, so he hasn't shown up yet.
He has not shown up yet. I'll give you a hint, a spoiler right here. If you watch till the end of episode 4, because we always do these after the credit scenes, and the only one that doesn't have an after credit scene is episode 3. But at the end of 3, the after credit scene is the first appearance of Kirk in our series.
First appearance.
And then episode 5
is all about Kirk.
It's all about Kirk because it's the enemy within.
Oh, very cool. Over the course of the 10, I guess, so we're going to see Kirk. We've already seen Uhura. So I guess, do we have an opportunity? I don't want to spoil anything, but is there an opportunity to see any of the other crew members appearing?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I don't think it spoils anything because they're there.
Okay.
We see Spock show up
very briefly,
who was originally going to be a voiceover, and then we actually had another human being there, so we were like, hey, here's a blue shirt. And we are going to see McCoy show up, and we're going to hear about Yeoman Rand.
She's
kind of, and if you, we are also releasing a companion webcomic that comes out every Tuesday, which is its own individual adventure, and she's definitely going to pop up there. So she's, Yeoman Rand has kind of become this weird, like, running joke in Ensign Williams' life. So if we go to season 2, it's my hope that we get to see her on camera. She's kind of like my rival.
Excellent. That hair is going to be hard to pull off.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Well, we live in Los Angeles. Someone can do it.
Yeah, Craig and I just had the pleasure of actually spending some time with her out in Las Vegas at the convention a month or so
ago. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, and there was actually a really good Rand cosplayer there.
Oh, exceptional.
Yeah.
Exceptional.
We were going to go to that this year, but we decided against it because I have this running joke that on one of my very first YouTube videos I ever did, and I'm in it, and somebody said, you look like the son of Commander Riker, because I apparently look a lot like Jonathan Franks.
It's the beard.
And I have this joke that I want to go to a Star Trek convention and pay to get the picture with him and bring him an ugly sweater, and I'll wear an ugly sweater, and we're going to do our family photo with my space dad. And we were going to go this year and do it, but he wasn't there. He nope. went to like Salt Lake City or something, like, or some other place.
He was originally on, and then he had to cancel because he got a gig, I guess, directing the librarian.
Oh. Oh,
work. God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was signed on early on. They had a couple cancellations this year, but he canceled pretty early.
Sisko canceled too.
Yeah.
Sisko canceled like what? A couple days before.
Yeah.
He was busy
after blowing
playing
off
piano.
Boston.
Oh, he actually lives really close to me.
So oh, really?
I can't believe I've never run into him. Yeah, I live right near Princeton, New Jersey, and that's where he lives.
I was gonna say, do you ever just hear him like singing off in the distance?
I had hoped that I would, and I've been in town a bunch of times and have never run into him there. Unfortunately, I would have thought I would, but maybe he's a private kind of guy. He has some kind of a farm type house.
If you've ever seen The Captains, they go to like his his ranch kind of thing.
Oh, and he's hysterical in that.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It's an amazing sequence. It's so funny to see Shatner trying to wrangle him.
Yeah,
I'm not. I'm not convinced that he's not messing with Shatner the whole time.
Yeah, he might have been.
Avery Brooks sort of has that quality though, where you're watching and you're like, I can't believe this, and you say, you almost think it has to be some kind of put on,
right?
But then you're like, it looks way too genuine not to be. It's amazing. If it is an act, it's a great performance piece. It
certainly is. So speaking of some of these guest stars that you guys are having come through the show, like, you know, we saw Uhura come through. Are they friends of yours or local actors and actresses in the community, or?
Season 1 is all of our friends because we didn't quite know how it was going to go down. Karshina Jefferson, who plays Uhura, is a friend of Jason's who just happens to look a lot like her. So, which is why she's the only facey that you get.
She was the first person that, as soon as we started talking about this, I was like, we have to have my friend Karshina. And Ashley was like, why? And I was like, she looks exactly like Uhura.
And she was fantastic. She was the first person that we shot with. And then we have the Two Broke Geeks. They're Geek and Sundry bloggers. They come on and Omar provides the brief Spock performance that we get. And then our McCoy is actually played by DC Comics writer Sterling Gates, who's a friend because we were like, hey, be grumpy, and he was like, I can so do that.
A lot of it was like, again, we didn't quite know how it was gonna go, and this is the first, like, and we had 2 days and we were like, man, do we really want to like be working with people that we don't know in this short time frame? Well, if we just do it with our friends, then, you know, everybody should at least have a good time because we'll just be hanging out with our friends.
And again, fortunate to live in LA and know people who are like, yeah, I'll come be on camera. That's totally rad.
That sounds pretty cool. So I noticed that Charlie X was a very physical episode.
Yeah. I
mean, and we've already heard a couple of the disaster stories, but I was curious, are we ever going to get like an outtake reel?
Hey, Jason, are we ever going to get an outtake reel? I have no say.
You're not the first person to ask me this.
All right.
Possibly. Maybe. There's a lot of footage. So it would be a lot of combing through footage. I know a lot of it. I don't, like, here's the thing.
A lot of it's just going to be me busting up at stuff.
Yeah, a lot of it's going to be just Ashley in front of the set just laughing at herself every once in a while. Like, that's going to be about it. We talked about it. I think we might not do it until after episode 10 airs. But we do have some bonus videos. Certain episodes have, like, bonus videos. Like, our Dr. McCoy episode, when he shows up, we decided to have a Captain Kirk, Dr. McCoy scene. So they get to talk together. And then you don't get to see Harry Mudd. What are little girls made of?
Mudd's Women.
Oh, Mudd's Women. There you go. Sorry. Mudd's Women has Harry Mudd in it. But in our version on the episode, you do not get to see Harry Mudd on camera. She just talks to him over the intercom.
Hmm.
But we decided, we're like, no, let's have a bonus scene where Harry Mudd meets her. And so we decided we did that. And so we have little stuff like that. But blooper reel, maybe after episode 10.
Hmm. Very cool. So the obvious question, of course, and I apologize if other people have asked you this before, but is 10 it?
Hopefully not. We're thinking about doing a second season. We probably wouldn't shoot it until about the same time next year. And if we did it, it would finish out all the episodes in the first season of TOS. So it would be
another
16 episodes for us. We would love to try and do an away mission because, again, we live in LA. So we're fortunate to be near a lot of, shooting sites that they worked on. That'd be really cool. Our cast and crew before it aired of what works and what doesn't work. So I think it would be a lot more guest stars. But yeah, we would really love to do a season two, but a lot of that is still, we've only released our second episode, third episode comes out tomorrow. A lot of that's going to depend on kind of how the next 7 weeks go, I guess.
And also it would be a thing too, like it would be something that we would consider crowdfunding just because, you know, we'd really like to, you know, maybe upgrade the set. Like let's have Anson Williams move into some different quarters, you know, stuff like that. You know, I don't know, and make sure that everybody has original series costumes. They all have them, and be able to actually feed our actors.
Yeah, to offer some more payment for people's services instead of being like, hey.
Well, that sounds like a perfect incentive for crowdsourcing is a blooper reel.
Yep.
Right?
But we have crazy ideas. Like when we first started talking about the series, we were like, oh, and if even like, you know, when you start a project, you do crazy talk. You're like, and what if this makes me a millionaire and stuff like that? And we did crazy talk of like, okay, what would be the next generation spinoff of this? And they were like, oh, so it could be Ensign Williams' great granddaughter on the Enterprise D. And then she gets transferred to Deep Space Nine. And then, like,
oh,
her sister gets, you know, gets sent to Voyager, you know? And they all look the same. And they're all played by Ashley.
Yeah. In 12 years, if we're doing Voyager episodes.
Well, you have to get assimilated at some point, though.
Oh, my God. The Borg actually scare me, so I don't really know how I feel about that.
So is there anything else that you guys want to talk about in regards to the show that we haven't covered yet?
I think the best thing to do would be that the best thing I can talk to you about is, you know, do a little shameless plug. And that's if you guys like the series, because I think you gentlemen really do, is just to share it. Like a simple tweet about it does so much. And like I, you know, there's other Star Trek productions out there like Axanar and Star Trek Continues. Mm-hmm. And there's another web series out there called Red Shirts. And they're not set in the Star Trek universe, but they're still kind of the same idea. And like, I think since we're in we're kind of in the Doctor Who glut of the 90s. And what I mean by that is in 1996, Doctor Who released a movie and then we didn't see Doctor Who again for 10 years. And right now we're in that except for we got a movie coming out. We just don't know when it's coming. And, you know, because Into Darkness didn't do that well. And like, you know, and we don't like I would love to see Star Trek come back to television. Like, I really think Paramount should go to Netflix and be like, hey, let us make a 13 episode series. But until that time happens, like fan productions and stuff is all we got. And I love all of them. And I think the more of them we have, the better we have. And if you like the Redshirt Diaries, like, you know, share a link or just tweet about it once and be like, hey. And so that way we get to see that and we're like, oh, you love us. Awesome. And then also other people who are also Star Trek fans, we get to help each other out because we get to show other friends who love Star Trek more Star Trek. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. So we're going to put all the information in the show notes. But for the people listening, what are the ways that they can watch and interact with you guys?
So many ways. The easiest way would be to go to www.theredshirtdiaries.com. The is really important or you will not find us. And we have every episode is hosted there and our webcomic goes there every Tuesday. You can also go if you want to subscribe so that you get a nice little reminder message every Monday that, hey, the Redshirt Diaries has come out. You can go to youtube.com/Jawin, which is J-A-W-I-I-N. That's Jason's channel where we're putting up all of the episodes. They go up early every Monday. Well, early in the Pacific time zone, not so early in the Europe. You can find me on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson because I don't have a creative Twitter handle. And Jason is at Jawin, same spelling as YouTube channel.
Excellent.
Oh, very cool. And rumor has it that you guys may be coming back on the show to give some teasers for your upcoming episodes.
Yeah, we're thinking about it.
All right. Well, we'll keep the audience hanging. And if you show up, you show up.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool.
No, we'll definitely be there.
Awesome. Well, Ashley, Victoria Robinson and Jason Inman, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Our pleasure. Hey, everybody, before we let you go, I wanted to let you know that the Redshirt Diaries is currently running a little contest, and all you have to do to enter is share a link to their third episode, Where No Man Has Gone Before, on social media. Be sure when you do to use the hashtag TheRedshirtDiaries. Doing that will automatically enter you to win a giveaway of your very own Tribble. He comes in a little plastic canister, too, so he's kind of cool looking. So the winner will be chosen at random and announced on Monday, September 22nd. Good luck, everybody.